So this is session 3 of presenting the path, which is module 3. And before we start, as normal, I know some people had jobs, some people came from home, some people had a busy day. It's always good to bring your mind to the present. And you want to, for the next hour and a half, we're going to be talking about some of these nice session topics. And it's better to have your mind focused here and get your mind open. So let's just do a quick seven-point meditation or calm-abiding meditation. So you start with your back straight. And the reason you keep your back straight, it doesn't have to be rigid. It's just say it's a good posture for your spine to be straight. And when you go learning about it, it talks about wind channels that helps your body. You want to keep your legs flat on the floor if you're sitting on a chair. If you're sitting on the floor, either you do a full vajra or half vajra, which is just folded legs. Okay. Your arms are relaxed, and simply because you don't want it to be too tight like this. And people who do meditation for a long time, you want the little air to go through here. It's relaxed. Your head is slightly tilted forward, just like this. It's not down like this. Okay. And it's not rigidly straight, just relaxed. Okay. Your jaw and your mouth is again relaxed. Your tongue is behind the teeth, touching the top part of your mouth, which is the palate. Okay. That's where your tongue is. And then your hands, your right hand above your left hand, and your thumbs are touching about a couple of inches behind your navel. So let's get the posture right. Be relaxed, be comfortable. Once you're settled, one of the neutral things that you can focus on is your breath. So I want you to do, or what you should do, is when you breathe in and breathe out, just bring your mind gently to that near your nostril where the breath is going in and coming out. You might feel a small light sensation. And keep your mind just on it for a while. If you notice that your mind is wandering or thoughts come, just observe them, just take a look at them and let them go and bring it back to your breath. Let's do that for a few minutes. Okay, while you're in a little calmer state, let's set the intention. So let's just start by putting some thoughts into our mind. You know, surprisingly, we can and actually choose to think some thoughts. Well, we can put our thoughts in our mind, and we can decide. We manage our minds. It's our mind. And what we're trying to do basically is think differently. Just think, I really do, I know, I want to develop my own qualities. I know I want to suffer less. This is definite. And I'd really like to be able to benefit others. That would be amazing. And so Buddha says, you know what? You can do this. So think, may this action here, this sitting together, listening to Buddha's ideas about happiness, about suffering, about how things are, all the questions we have, may listening to this strongly develop in my mind and my potential. Thank you. Okay. As I said in the first class, that every class, I'll attempt to at least bridge everything. We'll go through a summary. It helps the people that are coming here for the first time. It also kind of reemphasizes what we've gone through. And it's good to put things in perspective. Remember, this class is the third module in the series of the entire 13 or 14 classes that we have. Some of these topics that we cover, they go deep into each particular topic, right? But the presenting the path is to give you a good framework as to what this looks like, okay? And when you come to Kadampa Center or you go to any Buddhist centers, you hear so many things, right? You hear all the pujas and the mantras and some in Tibetan, maybe you go to a Vietnamese place, whatever, and you start to wonder, what is all this? So the idea behind this module is to set some fundamentals, get you some baseline, and then give you a good overview of what Buddhism is about, okay, and what this path is about. So we started last class, obviously, we did our prostrations, the meaning of prostrations, and so forth. Okay, and then we saw a nice video. It was a 27-minute video. And I like to, again, point that this two slides out. I think it's very important to see this slide in my mind. It says few things that are key. One, it says that it's a comprehensive system that shows us to transform our minds. If you want to take a pause, our minds. From a state of suffering to satisfaction to one of extraordinary joy and awareness. And if you remember, I mentioned that a lot of times you come to these classes and you hear the word suffering and death and different realms. It's not about those things. What Buddha is saying is, this life, this samsara, face the fact it is based full of aging, death, suffering, and pain, and how do you want to get out of it so you have joy and happiness. So the goal is happiness. Okay? I would doubt if somebody really wants their goal to be unhappy. I think we all strive for happiness, right? So that's the point. But it's important. Vast in scope and profound in its implication. Buddha is all about pragmatism. He is not about this, hey, I think you should do that. I think it would be a good idea. Not that. Very pretty poignant. Buddhism accommodates every kind of mental disposition, but retains a laser-like precision that shows us what to be accepted and what is it that to be rejected. I like that line. That tells you how pragmatic this is. And the good part is, it was realized and embodied by a human being like you and I. Right? 2,500 years ago, they talk about Prince Siddhartha, and what it ends saying is, because of his relentless determination, that's what we should have. A determination, a yearning, to find the ultimate freedom from this shattering mind, liberate our minds. He came to understand the nature of his mind and in turn the ultimate reality of the phenomena, the way things are. And he was then called Shakyamuni Buddha. So in that two paragraphs, it really has a couple of few good points in it. And that's the whole idea behind this class. And, okay? And that was the last piece that I mentioned. Okay, so let's start bridging a few things here. Okay? So we, class one, we introduced the concept of the three scopes of Lamrim. Okay, we use that word Lamrim. It's a Tibetan word. And it is a graduated path. Again, the idea is step by step, Lamrim, step by step path. Okay, so that's the whole, if you, the title of this whole module is presenting the path. So we talked about Lamrim. We talked about the three scopes, and it is really put together in a small scope, a medium scope, and a greater scope. Again, a couple of ways to explain that is it's all dependent on the capacity of the person, but if you generalize it, it's like our school system, right? We have a junior school and a high school and a college. You know, you don't want to start at a college when you haven't gone to junior school. You won't be that successful. So it builds you slowly. Okay? We talked about Gautama Buddha's little bit of his background. Who was he? We call him Shakyamuni Buddha now. But his birth name was Gautama Buddha. Family name was Gautama. And he was called Siddhartha, but then later on called Buddha, right? And we talked about his little life, how he lived. In the video, you saw the 12 deeds and all that, that, you know, his mother had a dream and how he took the steps when he walked and how Buddhas go through this. All Buddhas have very similar format, just different, some slight differences, but generally same. Right, and he talked about how he lived a normal life, but then what happened to him in terms of renunciation of his princely life, and how he went and in search for how to get enlightened. He had four sights, visions, and he saw the old man, a sick man, a person that died. He did not even know what all that was. And then he saw an ascetic or a monk-like person. And he realized that I need to find the answers. Ultimately, with a lot of diligence and perseverance, he came under a Bodhi tree, and finally he was enlightened. He gave us his teachings. He talked about the three wheels that he turned, and all in, they talk in terms of wheels because it's the major teaching by Buddha. The first one about the Four Noble Truths. Then he went to this place called the Vulture's Peak or Rajagira. He talked about the profound wisdom. Then he realized that a lot of people are not going to understand some of these things. So he reconciled some of these teachings so he can teach according to the capacity and have a little better, people would have a better understanding of what he's talking about. He did the third wheel. So anyway, in general, we talked about all that, those things, right? Then we talked about how the lineage teachings are important. And we talked about Lama Atisha. His statue is in the back of the screen. When you get a chance, you look at him. He is the real one. That he went to Tibet. There were a lot of yogis in Tibet and all that, but and Buddhism was there, but people had lost the plot. Very reason that there was really no graduated path. There were all kinds of things going on and people doing different things. And he realized that we need to bring it together. And so he created this beautiful book, The Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment. Right? That was the beginning. It was a very concise book. Then came Lama Tsongkhapa. You're talking, jumping from 11th to 14th century. He's considered a real lineage teacher, and he's the one who really took the graduated path, and we talked about the three volumes out there. Yeah, that's the go-to book, right? If you really want to understand Lamrim, very detailed, step by step, it's in there. Okay? We also talked about some other books, and there have been beautiful Liberation of In Palm of Your Hand by Rinpoche, Pabangka Rinpoche. Fantastic book to go to. It's a summary version of those three beautiful volumes. And so sometimes it's easy to go to those for reference. Okay? I rely on it all the time. And I'll be more than happy to share or show you what it looks like. So it's also important to understand the lineage without taking too much of your time in this. It's very important because there are a lot of books out there. a lot of people who claim to know a lot of things. It's important that you kind of keep with the lineage teaching to keep your mind focused on real teachings as much as possible. No, nobody, it's not that you cannot go and reference something or look something or research something, but the tendency, if you don't know, it's easy to go into different paths and different ways and different interpretation. So our teachers, at least in this lineage, they say that if you want to at least begin with, follow the lineage teaching so the teaching is consistent and it follows the path. Okay? So let's see. We talked about in the also in the three turnings, the two wings of the Buddhism. There's a couple of ways they describe that. They always say you need two wings to fly. There's two ways to describe that. One, in this particular case, talks about the first scope and the second scope. You learn all of these things, and it gives you what they call wisdom. You understand how nature, how things exist, and what karma is, cause and effect, and what death process is, and you kind of get the knowledge. But in order to have to be able to fly, you need this greater scope, which is the compassion piece of it, and that is the Mahayana tradition. I also like to point out the fact that a lot of people have in the background, I hear Theravada and I hear Mahayana and I hear all these schools. It's important to know that the Theravada or what they call Hinayana path and Mahayana path, you need both. Okay? It's like you want to go to middle of the school and say, now I know math and I know little English, so I know everything. Okay? Nothing wrong. You would be a fantastic human being if you were liberated through Hinayana path, at least for yourself. What Mahayana path brings in is universal attitude. These are just attitudes. This is not low and high and all that. You need all. You need both. So it's important to know that. Okay, sometimes the translations of lower vehicle and a higher vehicle may conjure up some mindsets in your, you know, that, oh, this is better than this and all that. It's none of that. You need to know all of that. But compassion plays the most important role. It's universal. If Buddha is enlightened being through for everything, then you need to have yearning for universal mindset, not just individual. But it would be fantastic first to liberate this shattering mind, right? Take our this roommate out of here for a while. Okay, so that's a good thing. All right, let's see. I think I had this. So any questions so far? How that first session went? Where we are, why did we do those things, right? Then the second class, we really got into it a little bit. I wanted to get into the scope number one. We were setting the fundamentals first, just a little background. It's like a introduction to the book, you know. Here's the teacher and in what conditions they wrote and that kind of stuff, right? So we got the story. Now we want to talk about it. We always talk about, oh, I want to get Nirvana. He was enlightened. What do they mean? What does that mean? We need to really understand the meanings of these things. So we defined the word Nirvana, and we defined the word enlightenment, and what was the difference between two. Okay? You can read it if you want to, but if you have any questions, let me know, and I'll move on here. Okay? Just quickly, Nirvana talks about the seeking escape from suffering for personal. It's on a personal level. Enlightenment includes completeness, full scope, with universal mind. Complete enlightenment. Okay? A little different. So it talks about full awakening, the state of being omniscient, the state of being omnipotent, and where it's attained when all the obscurations are removed. All positive qualities of mind are actualized and characterized by perfect compassion, wisdom, and power. That's enlightenment. So how do we reach there when we are in what we call the word samsara? Again, Asian word, Sanskrit word, no big deal there. Just understand the meaning of samsara. What is samsara? It's a reoccurring cycle of death and rebirth. And we are continuously in it all the time, and not always human, depending on your state of mind. Okay? And this is what Buddha calls that we are circling all the time. And the word Nirvana or enlightenment is the ultimate goal, is to be released from that. So you got to put that in perspective. What does that mean? We still have this big concept of I. We'll talk about that at some point. Will I be the same guy? All these kind of thoughts will come. Settle with that a little bit. Just think about it for a second. What is your goal? Where are you? And what are the path? What is the path? What tools do I need? What do I need to understand so I can be on my path? Okay, that's the whole idea of understanding the samsara, that this is where we are. And what causes the samsara? We talked about the word primordial ignorance. Not the ignorance of not knowing this is a book and that's a cushion. This is a different ignorance. They're talking about understanding the laws of cause and effect, karma, and not understanding this ideation we have. The root of the problem is that this existent I in me, that I inherently exists, and we all day long walk around with it. The goal is to really understand and contemplate on it, which we will in the incoming classes. We will talk about that. There's a meditation on it, actually, and we'll answer some of those questions also. But that is the root of ignorance. So we walk around with this. So what happens when I gets disturbed, if this ignorance gets disturbed, there's an attachment, right? Now, this is my house, this is my home, this is my body, this is my shoes, this is my cushion. The attachment starts. When the attachment starts and somebody disturbs that attachment, the anger comes out. And there you are. Okay? That's the normal lifestyle. And then when the time comes to depart this body, you walk around with this, what will happen to my. There's even a fear because you're going to lose that eye. And then what happens? You go with that, and those are the seeds that go on. So that's the kind of cycle we're talking about, and it brings you right back into, depending on your karma, you come back and recycle and go through rebirth process. Then we talked about, okay, all this is wonderful, and I know this is kind of a little scary piece there, but so what's the quality of Buddha? What is enlightenment? Okay, I want to be free, but what does that mean? What is Buddha like? So when we talk about omniscience, the word omniscience, dictionary-wise, or in Tibetan to be, they are very, very precise about this. They talk about accurate cognition. The mind knows everything. It's the mind is all-knowing, and we are deluded right now because of attachment and ignorance and so forth. But when the mind is clear, it knows all, has accurate cognition. So think about a state of Buddha's mind, accurate cognition. That means he sees all minds. It's an amazing potential. And then he's developed in the compassion side of the wing, omnipotent, meaning having infinite power. Now let's put these two together. It's a wisdom, the understanding of omniscience, of knowing exactly what and how, where and when, and who, and then it has the capacity to do what needs to be done perfectly to benefit all sentient beings. Okay? Sounds very much like what some faith may even call God or something, you know. But it's pretty organic. Buddha is saying it's not like that. You can do it. That's the best news in this. And I will put that up here so I can follow this with you. You can follow with me, I mean. So all knowing, all compassionate, all wise, all pervading. Buddha says we all have that potential. So that's the path. Right? That's the path. So we are learning. When you go through these modules, or when you come to Sigeshala, and you go to Lama Zopa Rinpoche, or LOP, or whatever you go, these are the tools they are giving you, guys, all the time. You know, do this, or do that, or do this puja, or practice, or it's all about it. When you see, even here, His Holiness is always talking about, be kind, be compassionate, right? It's all going towards that goal. Okay? Right, so we'll move a little faster now. Okay, so then we talked about the three contemplation, second class. What this means is, what does the word contemplation mean in English? To ponder, to look deeply, to look into it, and something you must really think about. I added the word, these are the three primers. Before you start painting the picture of the path, you got to have a primer on. If you don't know what your mind is and how mind works according to what Buddha is saying, then you're missing some fundamental pieces. Then you can start learning about emptiness and karma and all this. You're going to have this really gnawing question in your mind. What are they talking about? Right? So you need to know fundamental, basically. Right? So we talked about the nature of the mind. Okay? we talked about need to have a for a spiritual teacher. And I talk a little bit about it here. So I have some notes here. Okay. So we talked about mind is clear and knowing. That's the nature of the mind. It is a formless entity, right, with ability to perceive objects. So all real meanings behind mind. All knowing, all clear, has ability to know, perceive objects. You can understand that. And it is not your brain. It is not physical. It is not a soul. So all these conceptions we have are similar to that, or it's similar to that, you know, they must mean the same. It's very clear. Okay? So, it is formless, ability to know, and it's beginningless. Keyword. It's no beginning. So what does that mean? And we talked for people who are coming here for the first time. If you're thinking right now, this moment, that thought came from a previous moment. Right? That previous moment came from its previous moment. Now go back all the way. Then people conventionally would feel, oh, so when mama and daddy, I was born, that's where my beginning was. That's where we jump to. Because we want to see where the starting point is. Right? But Buddha would say, that mind came from its previous moment. Right? It goes on and on and on. And it brings forth with it. It's a continuous consciousness that carries forward, and depending on your activity, and we'll talk about it a little bit, it propels forward and goes on and on. Okay? The idea is, depending on your activity and your mindsets, you can cycle through this samsara, now that you know the definition, or you can become Buddha, the omniscient one, the omnipotent one. And that is the real happiness. Till then, you will have temporary happinesses, but you know what that means, that temporary. Okay? So that's the nature of the mind. Any question that is beginningless?
So with everything being impermanent, is Buddhahood impermanent?
No. Buddha is a state of mind 100% away from samsaric cycle and recycle. Buddha is already beyond that. Only in samsara, when you think in those terms, then you would see the previous moment, this moment, that moment, and it goes on. Buddha, the nature of Buddha is above and it's already finished the cycle. So it's not about permanent and impermanent. What is permanent and what is impermanent is what we need to think about it. So when we talk about permanent or impermanent, we are talking about how we perceive the phenomena. Things are interdependent. Things are in flux. Mind is always moving, and we also talked about that the very time a moment appears, it's already fleeting. It doesn't say this moment means, oh, it's stuck for this couple of seconds and now it's going to move. No, it is instantly gone. Right? We can only talk in this way. So when we talk about impermanence, the entire phenomena is impermanent. That's what they're talking about. Or empty of inherent existence. We'll get into that, and maybe we'll answer your questions more precisely. Okay, I want to build this so that we don't jump into emptiness. The tendency would be to then go into that deeper topic, right? But we'll talk about that. Okay, so second piece we talked about is the need for spiritual teacher. Okay, I know this is a tough subject. Even some of the Rinpoches have mentioned very clearly. We talked about mind. Okay, here we go. That when we think about a teacher, some things conjure up in our mind. Right? You've seen some TV shows and cults and all this kind of stuff. That's not what they're talking about. They really think, they're telling you, it is important that we've always had teachers. And if you can go to facts, look at your parents. They taught you how to walk and how to put your shirt on, right? We talk about that. In schools, you had teachers. Maybe some of you had coaches. You've always had some teachers. And if you wanted to, according to Venerable Robina, how clearly she speaks about cakes all the time, and she's really funny about it, if you want to learn how to make cakes, you go to your mommy. Say, please show me, she says. Right? We do that all the time. But when it comes to spiritual things, we mystify it. Oh, it's one of those things. It's amazing how we separate all these things in our mind. And she talks about first of all, it's very important that you get guidance, the proper guidance. And she talks about how do we go about looking for a teacher. And goes about check the teacher's quality. So we hear here, right? Check the teacher's quality. Okay, that's up to you how to check the qualities. You can check their students. You can check their reputation, what they say. It's easy to see Dalai Lama because you know the stadiums are full and you know that he is really amazing. But it's very difficult when you don't know somebody. That's given. So you must validate it yourself. You can even check their peers, right? It's an inferential way of looking or intellectual way of looking, but you're validating it. You have to make that decision, okay? And it's important. You get teachers come here all the time, and you love their classes. They say, oh my gosh, this was amazing. Well, who are their teachers? That's another way of validating it. If this person is this amazing, maybe this is my teacher, or maybe their teacher is my teacher, but that's another way of validating it, isn't it? So they're not saying about go for this shopping mode and saying, oh, I like this person. I think he's a great guy. I'm going to have him a teacher. You can have multiple teachers, but it's nice to have one root teacher that you can go and follow and learn systematically. Just, it's your choice. But what they're saying here is you must validate it. You make that decision. Once you make that decision, then you are committed. Commitment, when you have this commitment in yourself, is similar to having faith. You've done all the homework, and now you come to conclusion, here's my teacher. I'm going to learn from this teacher, and I'm going to really move forward. So now you have developed some level of faith in that teacher, right? And then once you develop that faith, now starts your practice. Because now he or she is going to teach you something. It's going to lead you towards the path, but now you have, and there's a whole writing on it. If you go to the Liberation in Path of your palm, I think it's 270 or 273 all the way, 217 to 273, all about devotion to teacher and what the relationship should be like and how you view the teacher and all those things, right? This is the mindset that we have to have, and it creates an amazing mindset to start your practice. So it's important. We all recognize it. Even the teachers recognize it. This is a difficult one, and they're not saying just go out there and get a teacher. No. But you should have a teacher, and it's an essential point. That's what they're saying. And don't look everything from filter. You validate it. Be confident. Have confidence. Okay? So that's an important point. Okay, the third primer is to understand the precious human rebirth. If you only realize how valuable your life is and this birth as a human is, then it sets the stage for everything else. All right? So think about it. They talk about this 10 endowments and leisures of life that Lama Tisha talks about. Basically says, look at, you are in a place where you can even practice dharma, number one, right? There's a couple of these things. I'm not going to go through all 18. You are maybe born when Buddha's teachings are still there. Or time when Buddha was teaching. There are so many other endowments. You have a great faculty to learn. You're sitting here today. Ears are working. Eyes are working. Brains are still reasonably well. Right? So you have these endowments. You have this opportunity to be able to go on this path to reach enlightenment. So how amazing it is that you are thinking about this and it's brought you hook or crook or finding a way, maybe this or another place, whatever it is, you are at least looking into how do I get myself into a state of nirvana and enlightenment. So that is what they're talking about. That's the value of human birth, right? To find ultimate happiness. Okay? So that's important to know. So then we, again, remind ourselves, so the nature of the mind, necessity of the teacher, and a precious human rebirth. These, I call them contemplations. You'll hear now and then, let's contemplate on that, let's contemplate on that. In other words, think about it. But these are important that they start before even you get into the scope, first scope. You must consistently think about it. What value you bring? How does your mind function? And I need to learn properly. So I need a guide. So that's what's all about, right? So that's your beginning. Then he got into scope one. And it's amazing, they start with the word impermanence. They talk about impermanence of us. This, all these things that we see, things are moving, mind is moving, our bodies are fleeting. The day you are born, you are aging, right? The day you are born, you are dying, basically. Okay. And it's funny how we are in denial, because we've been taught all along that somehow it seems negative. You have a negative mind frame. I don't want to disappear. I want to live long. I want to be healthy. I want to live long. So we have this always putting that in our mind. It's wonderful to be healthy. That's not the point. The point is we think this is only life and that this is it and I do whatever the heck I want. And the precious human rebirth and the nature of the mind, that those primers should tell you what is happening is you're going to let this body go at one point, but your mind will continue. Then the fundamental, the primer about mind and its nature tells you, wow, it is beginningless, is going to continue moment after moment. So what I put in that mind is important because that can go with it. And so it makes not only this life better, but also your death process better. You think about, you know, if you work in a medical area or not, it's a fearful ordeal for a lot of people, right? When they're about to go, there's a fear in their body. What will happen to me? Unknown. And where does that mind go during that end times? It will go to what it's familiar with. Right? What do you naturally think right now, you have tendencies. If you were to sit down and relax and think about some things you want to think about, it will go to what you have conjured up in your mind to be happy state or things you like or things you want. Right? That's where we go. That's where mind goes because that's what we've trained ourselves to do. So what they're saying here is, it's important to understand things are impermanent, you will die. And we talked about the time of the death is uncertain. Death is definite. The time of the death is uncertain. And the key point in this whole piece is you need to prepare. Right? So three points. If you're taking Discovering Buddhism, I want you to remember these three points, okay? Just kind of put that in the back of your head. If you're going to take certification, you may want to take a test or a quiz or something like that. I want you to remember these three pieces. Okay? So at the time of the death, the only thing that is of any use to me is the positive seeds in my mind. Now you can start to see the beginning of the Buddhist path, right? You got to see when they talk about positive mind, negative mind, how mind works, how things continue. And so your precious human rebirth, you're here today trying to absorb some of these things. What do I need to do to be in this path so that I can get to my ultimate goal? See, so you're beginning to see you're bridging now, slowly walking over the bridge, and it's bridging everything together slowly and steadily. So we talked about the death. We also looked at the death process. Right? So it's important to see that, you know, step by step, you know, just I won't go into very detail, but I'll tell you very quickly. Okay. Let's see. Okay, yeah. So there are 8 stages of the death process that they talk about. And what they say is that there's a gross consciousness stages and a subtle level consciousness stages. Okay, that's the entire process, how your gross senses go into dissolution, and then the subtle consciousness goes into dissolution. And everything is made up of the 4 elements, the earth, water, fire, and air. Our body, all the particles. They have all those 4 elements. So as your body is going through the stages, it goes through the first stage where the earth element goes. Okay? So it dissolves. And what they say is your eye sense goes away. You see this internal signs of mirage. The second one is the water element that dissolves. Your bodily fluids kind of dry up. Your consciousness ceases to function a little bit. And then internal sign, you see like a smoky feeling. Then the next thing is the fire element goes. That's the heat in your body. You're not able to digest food or drink anymore. They can push whatever they want through your IV, but your body is basically saying enough. you know, and the internal sign, your nose sense goes away. You see like a little sparky flies type feeling. You get little dots in your mind. That's what they say. I'm going through how it is defined in the books. Okay. And then the wind element dissolves your inhalation and exhalation. And if you've seen, I have seen it many times, is labored breathing. And at one time the breath goes out, but it doesn't come back in. Okay. And then you start to see a little flat line and they think you are now dead. And the CPAP comes out, things come out, everybody's standing there, and we kind of think the person is gone. Buddhism saying, stop, you're not gone yet. And that is why it's very important that you create an atmosphere of quiet, peace, even do some prayers. Okay? It's amazing that the subconscious, the conscious, the subtle level is still functioning. Very subtle levels. There are winds, channels in your body. And what they say is it goes through, before I go there, it's important to have that atmosphere. You're not squibbling over things and, oh, you know, crying and making loud noises and making a big ruckus. You want to get the quiet. Maybe you want to put a CD on. Maybe do some prayers. You never know what that imprint can carry. Right? So that's the nature. And that applies to all sentient beings. That includes your pets. They don't understand what you're saying in Tibetan or in English. But if a seed of those words or comfort or feeling confidence or comfort around you, that's a positive state of mind. And a positive state of mind propels out to a positive state of future happiness. Okay? That's the reason. Okay? So you want to help the animals, you want to help the human beings, okay? And now the subconscious levels, the subtle conscious, I should say, there's the appearance of white dissolution, and what they say is the wind channels from your body goes towards your head, and you get this white sky look, okay? Appearance of a white light type thing. Then that dissolves, and the bottom channels come up, and there's a red color. These channels are aggregating, and they're moving towards the heart. They go into the central channel. You see this reddish color. Then the red color dissolves. Eventually, it winds up in the heart, a small, subtle energy drop. And this is where they call it the mind of a black near attainment dissolves. At this point, your consciousness is ready to go out. Based on your karma. It gets propelled by your karmic activities and it leaves. Okay? So, important to know is in this, there's a process. We will all have to go through some of this process. It's good to prepare. This is not about, either it should wake you up from a denial that it's not going to happen to me. I'm still too young. It can happen to healthy people. It can happen to young people. The point is, we have this great opportunity to prepare our mind, be peace with it, have peace with yourself, and at least put some positive thoughts in your mind. Right? It makes living better, and it also allows your mind to go to a better location. Okay? Again, there is no judging. Okay, when this happens, nobody's sitting there and judging you. Okay, there are no gates to judge you, nobody sitting there to judge you. According to Buddhism, it's a very organic process. Moment by moment, you manage it. Okay, that's the best part of it. And at the time of the death, virtue will be natural for you and it will ripen. Then you go into intermediate state, it's called bardo. And in Buddhism, they talk about this 7 days. You go through this state, and then if you don't find the body based on your karmic activity, you can go up to 49 days. That's a huge book on it, what happens and all that. There's a lot of details in it. This is not the course for those details, but it goes through this intermediate state. Eventually, it winds up taking a birth in something, some sentient beings. Okay. So, that's why, at some point, you said, okay, I am very happy that I understand I'm beginning to understand the nature of the mind. I understand Buddha's teaching. I like the teaching. I really want to learn it. Okay? and I need to be in a place where I can really experience some of these things and we can get help. And that's why people take refuge. Okay? You see a little baby going to mommy, right? Or a father or a mother. We take refuge. If they're hungry, we take refuge in the refrigerator. Don't we? Okay? So this is a refuge by saying, yeah, this is great. I really serious about this. I gotta change myself. You know I do a lot of things and I'll work with it and it's a step towards it. Right? We talk about analogy. If you wanna work out, you gotta start slowly somewhere and acknowledge the fact that I need to. It's the same thing. You acknowledge it, that's why you take refuge. Okay? So you take Buddha's teachings, dharmas are the spiritual teachings, and then you take Sangha. Okay? Any questions? Okay, so we're going to talk about realms very quickly. I'm not going to take a lot of time talking about realms. We'll start right from the upfront that sometimes this kind of topics makes you think like, oh my goodness, sounds just like this or sounds like that. All we are saying is your consciousness, this is not a ticket that you buy to go someplace, visit and come back. I don't like it. I got to get back here. You can't do that. It is dependent on your consciousness, your state of mind. And what they're saying is that you can go to, if you divide things in cosmology of Buddhism, they'll say you can say superior beings and you can say sentient beings, two levels. Superior beings are already out of the samsara, cycle of samsara. They're liberated. They're on their way. So they're called arhats, bodhisattvas, attainment towards Buddhism. But when you come to the sentient beings, there are these realms they talk about. There are three upper realms and three lower realms. Okay? And these are realms, a dimension in per se. You know, this is where your mind can go, and you can even sometimes relate to it on this earthly level also, that there are beings that suffer dramatically, and there are some beings that are in very happy state of mind, but still in samsara. Right? So let's talk about them very quickly. Upper realm, they call it the deva or the god realm or a demigod realm, and then there's a human realm. Okay? And in the lower realms, you can call them hell realms or hungry ghost realms and animal realm. The point is that we are familiar with animal realm. Plenty of them. Humans are very small compared to animal realm. Be aware of that, right? We know that. If you look at all the critters out there, right? All the sentient beings, they're all sentient beings. They call sentient mind possessors. That's a sentient being. That's another term we use a lot in Buddhism. Mother sentient beings, may all sentient beings be happy. What are we talking about? Mind possessors. Okay? Alright, so three upper realms, three lower realms. There's a lot of writings that you can go into liberation in the palm of your hand if you want to be very critical. They even talk within the god realms, there are different regions and seven types. Even in the lower realms, there are all these regions of from extreme painful to least painful. Again, these are state of minds based on your karmic seeds. Okay? And upper realms, again, they are very blissful, live for a long, long time, lot of desirable material things. But they're so busy into getting those things, at some point that good time runs out, and guess where they are? Back in cycle again. Okay? So the goal is not about desire realm. If your activity is good and you wind up there, great. You're in a little blissful state. But human realm is a very good realm in the sense that you can practice. You can practice. You're not so hung up about gaining and fighting and this kind of stuff. You at least can practice. So think in those terms. But there's a lot of detailed writing. There's a whole cosmology on the realms and positions and where and how they're layered and all this stuff. That's not the topic of this session, actually. I just wanted you to know, you understand that there is depth and impermanence, the nature of the mind, the need for the teacher, and you can understand the precious human rebirth. You can understand that the death process. You understand that consciousness continues. And if depending on your seeds, you can wind up in all different areas or different places. Okay? And in these upper realms, things can also exist formless or with gross forms. Okay? Depending on how much you meditated and you had some defilement left, they are still very subtle bodies. they're still practicing some of these things. So there are different ways to exist. Okay? I'm not going to go into a lot of details and exact science of that right now. Okay? The human realm is important because better rebirth from the point of wanting to practice. But the minds are still deluded. And then animal realm is very important, just so you understand there are countless of them, and it's not a pleasant place to be. Even you look at your pet, you might think it's a wonderful place to be. Maybe there are some good karmas to be your pet. But they always live in fear. They all have other issues. And if you're an animal outside, they're always watching out. And if you look at National Geography, you can see what animals do to animals. You can see the suffering. Plenty of that. Okay? So, again, here's a little, let's see, I want to make sure I follow this. Okay. All right. Before I start and talk a little bit more about refuge, if I were to die now, look at all the negative seeds in my mind due to countless past lives, I could get an enormous suffering life like an animal birth, for example. But if I have a positive seed, I can really move forward to a much better place, right? And we can go on our journey to become a Buddha. Okay? And according to Buddhist view, there is not a single atom of space where you won't find sentient beings. There are countless of them, trillions of them. Okay? So let's understand. We'll talk a little bit about, we talked about samsara and rebirth. We talked a little bit about refuge in the three jewels, and we actually talked a little bit about graduated path. We're moving along this path now, right? Okay, so let's move on. So if I were to go this last slide here, let's see if I'm not this one. We talk about absolute and relative jewels. Okay, this is still part of refuge. You'll hear this word, relative Buddha, and you'll hear the word, absolute Buddha, sorry. Relative and absolute. What does that mean? Okay, so let's talk about that. So relative means when we talk about historical Buddha, when we talk about Shakyamuni Buddha, how he lived, he was a prince, he was a king, he became enlightened, that's called relative Buddha. When we talk about relative Dharma, we're talking about all the teachings that we get here, okay? And there are three types of teachings. So just for your knowledge sake, Buddha's teachings are broken into three baskets, they call it. One is called Vinaya, okay? The second one is called Abhidharma, and one is called Sutra. Don't worry about the words. Vinaya means discipline. So when you take vows and ordain people, there are certain discipline and vows that they must follow. That's called Vinaya. So life by certain disciplines. Abhidharma is a systematic philosophy and psychological analysis of existence, as this is the basis of Buddhist systems, right? Mind training. That's Abhidharma. And then you have these aphorisms, sutras, teachings. You know, we talk about karma and how it works and what you should do and not do it. A lot of these things. And that's called all fall into sutra. So the three ways to dissect how the teachings are bucketed. Okay? Then we talk about relative dharma. So we talked about the three teachings. These are the three ways of teaching things. And then relative sangha. When you have an assembly of four or more ordained monks or maybe you can even generalize to your community. So it's in conventionally speaking, that's your relative sangha. So what is an absolute Buddha? Okay? A fully developed, with infinite compassion, right? Knows everything. We talk about omniscience and omnipotent. That state of mind, that is fully enlightened state of mind. That's absolute Buddha. Okay? Immense power. Capacity to go be anywhere, any place, any time. That's the absolute Buddha. So historical Buddha, absolute Buddha. Just the way to think. Absolute Dharma. It's the knowledge of actual realizations of a superior being. When you are Arya or a Bodhisattva, way up, meditated, inching very close to becoming Buddha, you are in state of mind. That is the real Dharma for them. They realize everything they need to realize and they are going towards the Buddhahood at that stage. Okay, they're not going to go home today and say, let me read chapter 2, chapter 3, like that. They've already gone through that. Okay? And then, of course, absolute Dharma is that, and absolute Sangha is the true cessation of suffering and becoming an Arya being. When you become that being, you are basically beyond some ordained level, you become a bodhisattva or arya. You get all your chatter out of your mind. You're a liberated person. That's just the absolute nature of things. So you can see things in two ways, very relative here, and you can also see it from a perspective of absolute nature of those things. Okay? Any questions? So when you take a refuge, for just so you know, there's usually a short ceremony. Okay? You listen, you've already listened to the teachings, you've practiced them now, it makes sense to you, you have respect for Buddha, you have respect for Dharma, you have respect for the Sangha, you understand some of these concepts now, and you finally decide, I want to be on a Buddhist path. Okay? And that's what refuge really culminates into. That's what, basically, that's taking a refuge. So it's a nice little ceremony. Okay? And you take a couple of vows. So let's talk about vows. Okay? Vow is a commitment. It's a determination in your head. So when you become, when you take refuge, you have to take a vow. A strong internal commitment. Right? It protects you, really. If you take a commitment and you follow it, it protects you, and I will talk about that in a second here. So what are the vows? No killing, no stealing, no lying, no sexual misconduct, and no intoxicants. I've seen many places you can take a couple of these or all of these. Right? It's up to you. You're committing to it, so you need to abide by it, those things. Okay? In Lama Zopa Rinpoche praises taking vows, he says the power of vows is stunning. And he says, for example, if person A is about to kill an ant, or not kill an ant, there's an ant and there's a person A, and he goes there and says, I'm not going to kill this ant. He created a positive merit for not killing. That's amazing already. But a person who has taken a vow, that positive is way more higher. Why? Because it is in their mind stream all the time. It is already, the whole idea is about your mind and commitment. Remember, guys, you're on the path to becoming a Buddha, so every moment is already in you not to kill. I've taken a commitment. So you're not even going to do and say, oh, I'm not going to kill. It's already in you at all the time. So what Lama Zopa Rinpoche is saying, that's the power of vow. Because when you commit to yourself and you make a decision for yourself, it goes in your mind stream. It's already there. Whereas for a person who's just walking around saying, yeah, let me kill this one. Well, I don't want to kill this one. Not killing was a good thing. Killing was not a good thing. But though that was a positive vow, I mean positive action, the person with the commitment of not killing had a lot more positive merit. Okay? That's the level of commitment. Okay. So, alright, we're going to go into karma. Okay? We have half an hour. Again, I just want to start with the fact that this is not the module on karma. You will have an entire module, just 5 or 6 classes, deep dive into karma. What we will attempt to do is give you an understanding of what karma is, how it works. So at least you have some fundamentals set in your mind and you understand the laws of cause and effect. Okay? You can start with that understanding. So there will be, I will also let you know and tell you that there will be a lot of questions in your mind. As you go through some of these things, your mind will start to go like, oh my goodness, well, what does that mean then? And what does that mean? So first listen to it honestly, understand it. See how Buddha is telling you or what this session is about or what teachings are. And then have those questions and we can have a real discussion either after class or let's even table it and maybe Geshe-la can answer or somebody else can answer or we can talk about it. But it's very easy in this subject to get into one thing and go way deep into it and go into circles. Okay? There needs to be a couple of factors that are working together. You need to have an understanding of karma. You have to have a little understanding of emptiness and how things work. But you will at least walk away with understanding of what they're talking about. Okay, what is Buddhism? How Buddhism thinks about karma. Not they. How Buddhism thinks about karma. What Buddha is telling us. What our teachers are telling us. Alright? So let's start with that. So, Let's see. Okay, so karma, you see a lot of definitions on karma. Some people, you hear the word cause and effect. And some people say action and reaction. It's also synonymous. You can define it in English and cut it to pieces. Okay? But understand that there's an action, there's a reaction. There's a cause, there's an effect. That's what karma means. And karma in Sanskrit, all it means is action. This is the word karma. Okay? So, we understand that. So now, let's talk about what Buddha says. It's the Buddha saying that everything that we do, say, and think is a karma. Okay? Think about this for a second. Everything you do, say, and think is karma, which leaves a seed in our consciousness. Consciousness is synonymous with mind. Mind is not your brain. Remember that. Okay? So it leaves a seed in your consciousness, our mind, that ripens in the future as our experience. So positive or virtuous actions produce happiness. Negative and non-virtuous actions produce suffering. Okay. So let's talk about this here. Okay, good. It's from moment to moment we are sowing the seeds of our future experiences. Moment to moment. So when you're using these tools in the center or studying or on the path, you're practicing meditation, concentration, analytical meditations, whatever you do, what you really should be, you're working at, actually you are working at, on your mind. And when your activities, when you do, think of the motives behind the activities. There are many examples, right? It could be generosity is wonderful. I want to give $5. Wonderful. Great job. Great merit. Good mind. But if I do it with the wrong intention, oh, Gary gave $7. I'm going to give 8. Good deed, good activity, intention is not that good. So every moment that we put those seeds, they go and multiply. And they go, and I will talk about this in a second. So, in essence, we are the creators of ourselves. Buddha says, no one made us. The more you take Buddha's view of mind, the consciousness of our own is, our consciousness is our own. There is nobody creating this. The more you see it, the more you start to understand how organic and how practical this is. Okay? So now, then they talk about, we'll talk about this, okay, the natural law. Okay, so when we talk about Sir Isaac Newton, about gravity, did Isaac Newton really create gravity? He didn't create gravity. He experimented with it. He recognized it. He studied it. Then we kind of follow through with it and find, yep, that's true. I can really be really touching ground right now, but if I was in the moon, maybe I'll fly a little bit. There's no gravity there, right? So we find out, we validate it, and we say, okay, he's the one who created, or he at least discovered gravity. Buddha is saying the karma, the law of karma is just like that. It is a law. That's the way things happen. That's what he realized. That's what he recognized after he got enlightened, and he's telling you how it works. So you can call it a law of karma. Okay? It's a natural law just like gravity. It's a great statement by Master Nagarjuna. The action of body, speech and mind created with attitude of greed, hatred and ignorance lead to suffering. From all actions created with the opposite attitudes of love, compassion, and wisdom, only happiness comes. I thought that was very particular. Okay? So, to make it simple, they really gave us even more. They say, okay, let's talk about this. What are the non-virtuous actions? So, virtue of mind, I mean, body, speech, and mind. Remember, we already said everything you say, do, and think. Right? So, let's talk about those things. So, the three of the body, obviously killing, stealing, sexual misconduct. Now, each one of them has a lot of readings and understanding, because you already your mind will say, what do you mean by that? Okay? What does that mean? You know, so you need to think, just right now, just understand. They made it in a very simplistic terms. This is what you need to know. And then you need to ponder a little more into it and understand that. There's lots of writings on it. Even in Lamrim, there's plenty of mention of all these things. But just understand that these are the three things that they say. And remember, some things you can very easily assess. If you now bridge everything, we talked about the primer, the nature of the mind, right? So you know how mind works. It's continuous. Everything you put in it will carry on. We talked about that, how it propels the karmic seed. So you kind of get an idea. So when you kill somebody, right? Just take one example. Okay? A couple of things happen. You may have created the fear for that, and that may be a different karma working for that object. But you think about your propensity or your attitude for killing. What is going in your mind for you to take that action? Now, there are a variety of degrees of all that, which we'll touch a little bit of it, but think in terms of the most mundane intention of hurting somebody, with the motivation to hurt somebody. Okay? Where is that seed of karma going to be? In your mind stream. You do not know when that will ripen. You know, what it will combine with and how much ramification, or they say the energy expands. You do one thing, it has a multiple pieces, it keeps on compounding, so you don't even know when and how it will ripen. But you can understand that everything they are talking about is making your mind positive. And this will be considered a non-virtuous action. That means you will have negative outcome. Okay, simple, very simple in that way. This is in simplistic terms. Okay, then of course the four of speeches, right? So when we talk about lying, just think some of this makes sense, right? Do you like to be lied to? No, generally speaking. Now, you can define what is lying and all that. We have an intellectual mind, and so we can define little subtleties of that. And we can discuss that. But just basically speaking, you don't want when somebody takes your stuff away. You don't like it. If somebody hurts you, you don't like it. You can look at it from a simplistic terms of these, so they talk lying, speaking harshly, slander, like divisive speech, and gossip, unnecessary chattering, you know. And three of the mind, covetousness, okay, ill will, anger, of course, and wrong views. And we'll talk a little bit about each. So if you want to really understand it, go to page 385 of Liberation in Palm of Your Hand at some point, and look at laws of cause and effect. So I'm going to have a little, I took some notes from Venerable Rabina's teachings, and she starts with a nice title, just like Venerable Rabina would. So she says, zip your lip and keep your hands to yourself. That's body and speech. how to manage your body and speech. I just like the way she just says, basically, zip your lip and keep your hands to yourself. Can you imagine, she says, never a harmful word, never a harmful action. What an amazing paradise we would live in. Okay? So you've got to control your body and speech. That much itself is very amazing. And he says, when you're not killing, you are saying something, somebody else is benefiting from it. You don't kill a little animal, it lives. So you're benefiting somebody. When you don't steal, other person has something. Right? So it's always a positive way of looking at things. So if you don't lie, others benefit. If you don't kill, others benefit. And remember I told you, all of these things when you do has a propensity to increase, compound. You know? And we can look at it from a general, very small perspective. I do something very good, or you do something very good. That person in turn does something good. That person does something good. It can go so many ways or not. Right? But this is a way sometimes the energy just expands. And when you talk in terms of life and moments and mental moments, you think of the reaction and causes and actions, how it can just go. Right? So you gotta think about what a negative, bad, negative, or non-virtuous action can also do. right? And what kind of mind stream then you would carry. So it's, this is not about, it's very plain, very organic. We have to work on these things. It's telling you very clearly, so start working on these things. Kind of think about, before you do, slow down and think, what's your motive? Am I harming somebody? You know, it just gives you a much better perspective on behavior. That's, it's how, at least you can start there, right? So, let's see. Covetousness means, you know, desiring something that is not yours, by the way. So Buddha says just by abiding this in these 10 things, it's a perfect way to abide in law of karma. You'll be more blissful, relaxed, calm, so positive. Seeds in your mind that will ripen in future as happiness. This is the first level of practice. Just understand these in karma. So the karma ripens in four ways. Now we're talking about, he got the seeds, right? Now really the karma starts to work. What happens? How does it ripen? So first one, if you can take a look at that, is the fully ripened result. If you sow the seed, you'll get the fruit. Okay? It's a type of rebirth your consciousness will take when it leaves the previous body at the time of the death. Past virtuous life, human rebirth. But you can also think about an example I read when I was taking some notes. She talks about, Venerable Ravina talks about, you can put Hitler and Mother Teresa in the seat together. Both have potential to become Buddha. Both are in human forms. But as soon as they open their mouth, you know which one is Mother Teresa and which one is not. Of course, she makes it a little joke out of it. But what it's saying is, even if Hitler had a positive mental seed to when he, previous life, he may be born in a Buddha, but there were many other negative things that ripened when he became Hitler, or we could know Hitler. Mother Teresa had a lot of moral, virtuous, seeds. And she's the Mother Teresa that we know. So just because you get a human birth, because these are things in people's mind now. Well, wait a minute. This guy's a human being. She's a human being. One is so nice. One is so bad. What happened in their past life? We have questions. How come bad people are rich? How come poor people don't suffer? We have all kind of questions. Very, very, and I've done enough reading to say, you know, it brings you right back to it. If you really think it out very carefully, initially you think in terms of I. So think about how we see things. How come that way? How come that way? It's because we see things with attachment. And what can this negative mind streams do? It is ignorant. It is attached. It has a propensity to do what it likes to do. It goes through the death cycle. The karma gets projected out. It finds a place what it wants to do. It finds that environment that it will be successful in doing that, and that continues. Like to kill, you have anger. Maybe your mind is a little scared when it's going through bardo, finds a lion, becomes a baby lion, and then you have a buffalo for breakfast. Right? So you can see how it goes, but also lions suffer. You think about how they live and what happens. It's just a very, very simplistic example how life can go on, how our mind works. Okay? Then the second one is the action similar to the cause. When you sow the seeds, they multiply. All the words, thoughts, actions we do in one's life are due to a habit of having done it before. Okay? Again, that example of animals killing animals and all that. Propensity to do that is just natural, habituated. Okay? The experience similar to the cause. One small seed can bring many fruits. Could be good and bad, okay? Of course, the examples we wind up giving is the bad ones. But remember, it works both ways. Please keep that in mind. I want to say the positive side too. If you are having a great place to live, some comforts to live, good life, good partner, whatever, you've done a lot of good things. You're in a human body. You have some great you know, your good life in that way, right? We still go through temporary happinesses and aging and sickness and all that, but generally speaking, and then somebody, you can see their conditions, could be a very bad home, mold coming down, I mean, so many conditions. You can think, born in a desert. Think about a person born in Syria right now, where every 2 seconds a plane is flying by and a building next to you just got blown up. Right? Think of those people that are starving in some African countries in a desert, where they have to go miles and miles to get a little sip of water. Right? Look at those conditions on this earth right now. You know, some people are born there. And then you can see some of us are in a very good place. Look at the environment. Look at where you are. So many conditions for it, right? So at least be thinking in those terms, it is all here. We create these things, and that's how it comes. Okay? Okay, and also that's what they call environmental karma. And what they say is, even the way the world is for us, the polluted, the beautiful, the earthquakes, it's called collective karma of sentient beings who experience that environment. It over time, tendencies to lose certain things, and then certain things happen. Past morality, you have harmonious living conditions in this life. Buddha says negative actions often ripen as suffering, positive actions ripen as not happiness. But this is not a reward and punishment system, guys. This is not, it's not that simple as, oh, you're rewarded because you're nice, and somebody giving you get the candy and you don't. It's not like that. This is very organic process. It is in your mind streams. There are various levels of these things that are going on. It is not random. It's very organic. The mind that you create has a propensity to do something. When it goes through bardo, it's going to find a place where it wants to do. That's where it will take birth. If you had many positive karmas, even previous life, some may have a ripe, they may ripen then. Or even during this life, you've done some lousy things, we all have at some point or time, if it says mind, body, and speech. But you are now practicing. You've decided you're going to do something good. And say your time comes, you're moving on to the next life. You start to think something positive. You're what they call throwing karma. At that time of whatever that consciousness, subtle consciousness throws out, that was a wonderful thought you had. And it only went there. No matter what the conditions were, that's what was in your mind. You may have a really nice birth, but there were still other things you did that needs to be purified or will have ripe. It will ripen in some way. And that's why in daily life, not everything comes very nicely, right? Some days are fantastic and some days like, what the heck happened here? Right? So they're just telling you how this works, basically. So just you need to just understand 4 ways it ripens. 10 virtuous actions, non-virtuous actions, and their body, speech, and mind, and everything you do and say is not random. It happens. It's a very cyclical work. It just works its way up certain way. That's all it's saying. You sow the seeds, you will have a result of it at some point. Now, good news is there are purification things, and we'll talk about that at some point. How do you purify? What does that mean, purify? Does it go away? You know, you've already committed it. There is also consequences. You can do wonderful things by purifying some of these bad deeds. And there are prayers and practices for that, which we'll cover. So nothing is random. This is all logical. It's a natural law. And again, I would like to make a statement. Just because we don't know what the cause is, we can't say, there was no cause. It's just the way things are. Don't we say that all the time? Hey, that's the way it is. That's not the way it is. It is what you are doing, and that's what happened to you. Okay, so 4 conditions to bring fully ripened result. So, here's we have a few minutes left. I'll just cover this, and then we'll carry on next time. So first one is intention. The most important thing is intention, guys. Keep this in mind. Intention. The mind is engaged in the decision to do something. In this example, we'll take an example of killing. Then there has to be an object. Okay? In this case, say, let's take an ant. Then there has to be an action. In this case, killing the ant. And then there has to be a result. In this case, the death of an ant. Right? These 4 things must take place for the karma to fully B8 karmic seed to ripen at some point. That's what they're saying. And then she goes into this two examples. Let's take Paula. Let's take Vicky. Vicky looks at an ant and says, oh, that's an ant. Ah, and kills it. Okay? And here's Paula. She's cleaning her dishes or doing something, and by mistake, an ant is walking by, and she kills it by mistake. Her intention was not to kill. Two different karmas, right? One with the intention to kill. So look at that mind stream. Why was that intention there? Now let's look at some of the things we've learned. Maybe a little bit of aversion. The three poisons. The three poisons are ignorance, attachment, and aversion. One of is aversion. Aversion is anger. Comes from where? Attachment of me. This is my place. This is my beautiful kitchen. My beautiful marble tiles here. What are you doing here? I don't want you here. I don't like you here. Bam. See? Went from that eye. Here's the other young lady, Paula, and she's just clinging and saying, oh my goodness, I killed the ant. Two different karmas. Unintentional. No intention. Did not meet these four criteria. Right? That maybe the intention part, I would say. So, a little different, right? So you can understand that. Action, there was still a dead ant. Okay? So what I'm trying to tell you is, this is a complex subject. It's not a black and white. A equals B and a B equals C. It's not like that. There are various degrees of mindsets. If you're trying to save somebody and have to do something, you still create a karma. There is still a result from there. But it's of a different level than a person goes with a gun and shoots down 50 people with the intention of killing. Very different. So remember those things at least, that what is important is the intention and the seed that you're putting in your mind. You know, you go with a plan, you want to do it, you want to hurt somebody, you have a propensity to do something horrible, that's what happens. You go with a virtuous mind, a moralistic mind wanting to help somebody, or you kill by mistake and feel bad, or you see an animal and think, you know what, I'm not going to kill it, but let me find something and let me just leave it outside. Or you put it in a little thing like this and say, here you go. You know, whatever the case may be, different minds. But remember, those are the karma lessons. I'm not making this up. That's what is being told. Yeah. Any questions on intention, object, actions? We'll talk about that in more. So, with the intention, the main factor is motivation. Remember that. What makes the action negative, basically, is obviously nobody likes to be killed or harmed. And we will talk about how the negative mind comes out of this ignorance that doesn't understand cause and effect, doesn't understand how things exist and are interdependent, how everybody is related, mother sentient beings, we've helped each other in our life. When you start to really understand the way things are, you will develop this compassion towards other things, and you will lose some of those fears, some of those attachments, and you're not going to go harming things, basically. Right? Okay, so let's see. And it, of course, goes into, these are all habits. It's very powerful, spontaneous. It talks about we are on autopilot. So we talk about mosquito before we close. I'll talk about a little mosquito. How spontaneously we kill a mosquito. It sits here, it goes that quick. Right? So you got to think about that now. Okay? Why did we kill that? It was an annoyance to who? That was an inconvenience to my surroundings, right? So we immediately, these are habits from past. I'm just saying this, okay? These are spontaneous, habitual reactions that we have. But maybe next time you'll go like this, or you say, let me put something on it so it doesn't come close to me. That's a different way of looking at it. So all they are trying to, our teachers are telling us is be mindful. Slow down, think about it before you do something. Or any of those non-virtuous actions. Okay? I would suggest to you, take your time sometimes and read about it. This is a very deep subject. There are some certain areas that will touch you personally. Whatever you do, just because a word says don't do this, don't do that, it may have different meanings to you. And I would suggest, in general, it is, Buddha is saying, non-virtuous actions, you will have a tougher life. Next life, it will lead to something bad. Positive things will lead to positive things. Why? because you're putting these seeds in your mind. When this mind develops a certain way, they stay here. Finally, the mind moments continue. In the end, there is a ripening of the karma in whatever realm or places you are, in this body or another body. With those habits, you will continue to do that, and it just continues, and that was brings you up and down in the circle of life and death in just different realms and different bodies and different places, right? And our goal is what? Remember the good news, right? We have the potential to get out of this. So think about that for a moment, okay? And so that's basically what it comes out, that the habit blinds us. We have a lot of tendency to do that. And there's another example. Maybe we'll cover it next time. Just a small piece of it is about how we do fishing. Okay? Fishing. We now think it's a luxury. We go in a great time. I'm in a boat. Fishing is considered like a wonderful activity. But you are also habituating yourself to say, it gives me pleasure to go out and do this. Okay? You can also think in terms of from the fish perspective. They line up to be picked up too. So what is that karma like? But we need to think from our side that this always will be there. So some karma is to get caught. Some karma is to do this harm. And what is this reminding you? Practice, be mindful of it. That's all. That's all it is saying to you, right? It's being mindful of it. And you can look at it from the intention also. So there's different ways to look at it. All right? So we are talking about not harming others. We are talking about this is based on karma. We create in relation to the actions we do. And it is a little intricate. It is not black and white. So with that, let's do a little dedication. Then I will give you some places that I want you to go for your next class, what I want you to do. So we'll do a little dedication, okay? So again, sit in a nice position. Get your mind in a place. Think about what we just talked about. And then we'll go through this real nice bridging. So let's just finish with a little dedication. Thinking, okay. We've listened so far to this concept of continuity of consciousness. To the nature of mind. It is beginningless. It is non-physical, not created, and its potential, especially of Buddhahood. We've contemplated the concept of needing a teacher, how to check them, judge them, and how to devote oneself. We've looked very briefly at the thought of this perfect human rebirth and how to be energized and not to waste it. We then thought about how our life could end at any moment. So thinking about death and impermanence. We looked at the death process itself. And we looked at the concept that I could die at any moment. And given that I've got countless karmic imprints, the potential for my future rebirth. We look particularly at the one of the suffering of being born in a lower realm and wishing for the methods to avoid that type of birth and turning to Buddha for refuge. We looked at karma and abiding by the laws of karma. We learned that karma ripens in four ways. We looked at the 10 non-virtuous actions of body, speech, and mind with the intent to avoid these actions that bring negative results. These seeds have gone in, and we've thought about these. May they ripen as quickly as possible in the development of my own amazing potential, so I really can be of benefit to all suffering mother sentient beings. Thank you. Like you to read this last piece before we depart, then I will let you know about some of the things that I want you to think about. This is part of your reading, by the way. If you do the three readings that I've been talking about from your required reading, Nick Reibusch, The Path to Enlightenment, the last piece in that reading, an amazing summary of what we just kind of did. He covers all of those areas in a very short and succinct, in a way nobody can really explain this. Very well done. So if you haven't read it, you should read it. I know we don't have a class next Monday, right?
Correct.
So I'm assuming that at least people who are seriously looking at this are reading the required readings, right? They are great readings. Believe me, I've underlined, and every time I read, I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. Oh, wow, this is great. Oh, here's ignorance. Oh, here's that. You know, it's really great reading, guys. If you're serious about it, it's amazing to see it explained different ways. Sometimes you walk away with a question, and somebody answers it with a nice example and say, ah, that's what it meant. So sometimes it helps to read those things. I also wanted to point out there are a couple of sites I want you to go to. So we talked about LamaYeshe.com. Right? There's a couple of things on that. There's one call I want you to read is the 12 links. The 12 links. Yeah. Just look it up, and I want you to read them. You will see how this whole thing comes together with understanding of those 12 links. It will also prepare you to understand the next topics that we will get into is the three aspects of the path, one being a renunciation, what that means. What are you renunciating? When you look at this and when you understand laws of karma, understanding the nature of mind, death and impermanence, now you read the 12 links, you will say, why I want to get on the path, and what is it that you want to not really come in your way. Very good way to read that. So I just gave you that piece there. There's also on fbmt.org/mandala, or if you're just in a Google or your internet, put down which vows are which about vows. It gives you very basic understanding. You hear these words, you know. And the reason I'm doing this is you come to center and sometimes say, oh, she broke her pratimoksha vow. What was that? What vows? So you go into a question mark. Nothing to worry about. You know there are lay vows. We talked about the vows for the refuge. Then there are basically precepts when you go to big places or some special day. Let's not do this. Let's not do this. Be quiet. Some vows. Then the ordained people have certain vows, those are patimoksha vows. And then when you get into the heavy duty tantra practices, the teachers give you specific vows. So at least you understand those words. Because a lot of times you say, what vows? What am I doing here? What am I committing to? It gives you a very quick one pager, and it's very good to be familiar with it. I would also suggest to you, you become familiar with Thupten Children's website. ThuptenChildren.org. She's a senior nun, venerable in our tradition. Beautiful sight. I find myself, sometimes I read, I still don't like get it to the deep level. I go there and sometimes she says, it's right there for you. Okay? And at a very high intellectual level, if you really want to study nitty gritty of each aspect of it, including things, I'll give you an example. I was reading, I was talking to Patty today and saying, you know, karma works in a funny way. Say you go with a good intention to talk to your mom or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your husband, and somebody interferes with the person at the other end and starts cursing. Doing something. Your intention was good. What happens to your mind here now? Who the heck is this, right? Boom. How those little things that happen in daily life, those uncertain things, how they work with this. He goes into depth of that kind of things. Berzin, B-E-R-Z-I-N, Dr. Alexander Berzin. He has his own training, but he goes really, really intellectual level. If you want to do your master's degree, that kind of thing you want to study. But sometimes very simple, like what's karma, and bam, it will come up. And we'll take you to step by step. I'm just giving you these other ways to look at things. Sometimes you need to read a book, but then you need to say, I'm just sitting on my iPad right now. I wonder what that is. Comes up right away. It's a good way to kind of interact in a lighter way. right? You're just kind of learning, kind of find out. What I want you to, at least from this class, understand, there are these fundamental things you should know that sets your foundation, and then what you see are tools. You'll see this prayer being done by Shantideva, wonderful to do. Oh, we need to do Guru Puja. Now you will start to put things in place. Oh, this is what they're talking about. Oh, this is what they were doing. But your baseline, your bridge, your connection to the scopes and graduated path is now beginning to put things in perspective. All right? And continue to read the books. Who's taking the certification program? Who's really planning to go through this entire 12 modules and take a test and all that? Nobody.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's okay. For you, I'll just give you two questions. Yep. And everybody can answer them, but I don't expect people to provide anything. But at least for your sake, in the first module we talked about what is the correct way to listen to the teachings. Just put a sentence or two. Describe the three parts. The three primers we talked about, have been talking about, what are the three preliminary contemplations? And you remember Atisha wrote that concise book we talked about, from which all the Lamrim came. What is the name of that text? Who was the author? I just told you. And what century? And what country did he live in when he wrote that?
Can you tell me again?
Just read about Lama Atisha, okay? That's what I'm going to say.
If I get this from you, I can put it online. Sure. Thank you.
Okay, there are some others, but let's just leave it at that.
I'll be back.
It will give you a good practice of thinking. I've been saying this, right? Lama Tsongkhapa did this, Lama Atisha said this. They had lost the plot, and so he wrote this wonderful book, right? So think of the three parts, upside down, one with the whole, right, with one with the dirty water. Think about what that means. And just write a line, but it will make you think about those things. Okay? That's a good thing. All right, guys. Thank you so much for sticking around a few more minutes.
And as Hemant mentioned, there is no class next week. It's Memorial Day, so we'll meet back on June 3rd. So continue with the homework and the readings, and don't forget to mark your calendars for Venerable Rabina, who will be here June 17th through 23rd. And look online on kadampacenter.org. No, it's fine. We don't need to do it tonight. Kadampa-center.org under Discovering Buddhism and then Discovering Buddhism Materials. I'll post homework and the About Buddhism class, and I'll put this resource page as well. Okay, so that'll be added in the next day or so.